Assist the client using behavioral finance concepts. Behavioral finance is defined as a field that studies how psychological influences and emotional responses can affect financial decisions and market outcomes. Behavioral finance concepts offer valuable insights into the why behind a client's financial decisions and actions. These include factors that have an impact in the moment but are not accounted for by a simple monetary cost/benefit evaluation of the situation. By incorporating these concepts into the counseling or coaching process, counselors can more effectively understand the cognitive biases, emotional influences, and psychological factors that may be driving a client's financial behaviors, especially when those behaviors seem inconsistent with their stated goals or best interests. This area is intended to highlight how behavioral finance can be a powerful lens through which to view and interpret client behavior. While tools such as interview questions and rephrasing client responses into reflective statements are essential techniques for uncovering the root causes of financial behavior, they are not behavioral finance concepts themselves. Rather, they are communication strategies that can be used in conjunction with behavioral finance frameworks to better understand and support clients. By integrating both behavioral finance knowledge and strong interpersonal techniques, financial professionals can create a more empathetic, informed, and effective approach to guiding clients toward lasting financial well-being. Behavioral finance concepts can help the client better understand themselves and their internal motivations related to money. Counselors can also conduct a self-inventory of these concepts to better understand themselves. Select interview question types for situation. If communication is the most important skill in life and interviewing is the most important skill in financial counseling, then questioning is the most important interviewing technique. Many aspects of counseling, including coaching, rely on asking the right questions in the right way at the right time. How questions are worded can make all the difference between a deeper relationship with rich information for the counselor and a harmed relationship with little to go on for counseling. Questions can be open-ended questions or close-ended questions, and each are defined as open-ended questions, inquiries designed to elicit detailed, expansive responses rather than simple yes or no answers. Close-ended questions, inquiries designed to elicit specific, concise responses, often limited to yes or no, used to gather precise information. Open-ended questions invite elaboration, such as, could you give me a specific example of when you chose to wait on something you really wanted to purchase? Close-ended questions result in yes or no answers, head nods, or very brief answers. They do not invite elaboration. Did you start building your emergency savings this month? A warning is that closed questions can lead to full stops in an interview, which can be awkward. Awkward pauses can be especially uncomfortable when discussing difficult subjects such as emotions. On the subject of emotions, questions can be classified according to whether they are asking the client to stick to the facts of a situation or if they probe into feelings and emotions about a situation. These are called level I probes and level 2 probes, respectively. An example of a level I probe could be, would you prefer to pay the highest interest rate credit card off first or the lowest balance card off first? An example of a level 2 probe could be, which would give you more satisfaction, paying the high interest card off first or level I probes. In counseling, these are straightforward questions, such as who, what, when, where, why, and how, designed to gather factual information. Level 2 probes. In counseling, these are deeper, reflective questions that explore a client's feelings to gain insight beyond factual information. Open-ended questions may or may not be phrased as questions. They can be imperative statements, which are defined as, in counseling, questions that are phrased as a directive statement, such as, tell me, to enable gathering information or getting clarification in a less intrusive way. Examples of imperative statements, tell me about your emergency savings progress or please explain how this goal is relevant to you. The use of statements as questions is a gentler way of questioning as it feels less like an interrogation. Both types of questions are appropriate at different times in an interview. When seeking more elaboration or to expand the conversation, open-ended questions are favored. When seeking less elaboration or to slow down the conversation, such as a brief clarification, a close-ended question may be best. An effective interviewing style mixes up the use of open and close-ended questions and open-ended questions as statements to help regulate the flow of the discussion. For example, after reviewing a client's credit report, the counselor observes that the score is too low to get a traditional mortgage, the client's key goal. The counselor says, "Tell me how you could achieve your goal in a year or two." The counselor knows some answers but lets the client take the lead. The client says, I miss paying a lot of bills on time due to absent-mindedness more than the inability to pay. Counselor, If you had a good way to remind yourself when to pay bills, do you think you would use it? Client, yes. Counselor. And on a scale of 1 to 10, with 1 being not at all ready, how close are you to committing to making an action plan for this? This last question is an example of a scaling question, which asks clients to rate something to put it in perspective. On a scale of 1 to 10, with 10 being the most important, how high would your anxiety level be with a job loss if you had 6 months of expenses saved up? This example could be compared to an anxiety level the client had rated for no emergency savings. It also can be used to help assess change readiness. Soliciting exceptions is a way to help clients see that they may be overgeneralizing or exhibiting self-limiting behavior. Some types of financial behavior-related questions that may be helpful are miracle questions, hypothetical questions, and dilemma questions, which are defined as miracle questions, a counseling tool that prompts clients to imagine their future if a problem was magically resolved. Hypothetical questions, questions based on imagined scenarios or situations, often used to explore potential outcomes, test reasoning, or facilitate discussion without referencing actual events. Dilemma questions, a type of inquiry used in financial counseling that poses a situation to a client and then provides them with two or more undesirable alternatives to choose from, all leading to an unfavorable outcome. These questions are often used in motivational interviewing to get at what matters most to the clients so they can realize their desired goals for change. They can also be used early in a relationship to help determine why a client is seeking help. Miracle questions suggest an obstacle suddenly disappearing so the client can see the issue from a longer-term perspective. For example, the question could be, "If you were to wake up tomorrow and all of your problems disappeared, what would that look like?" This question needs to be set up with proper rapport and used in the right part of a session so the client does not think such a question is dismissing their struggles. Hypothetical questions are a what if, how would your life be different exercise. They allow the client to perceive how their life would be different in that situation. The point of either type is to help the client picture what the future could be like when they cannot currently see the forest through the trees. Depending on the client, this could be envisioning their ideal job, ideal residence, frequency of vacations, or their retirement lifestyle. Miracle questions can also be directed towards discovering shorter-term dreams, such as what kind of car you would drive, how often you would like to eat out, and so on. The client's answers will reveal their priorities, such as being out with meals at home most of the time to enable that new car. Example, Alicia is in her 20s. She puts owning a home as a priority. Through interviewing, the counselor determines that Alicia genuinely feels that this is a priority for herself, but when asked about her day-to-day life and how this would change if she met her goal tomorrow, Alicia finds there are a lot of things about renting that she likes. She likes the flexibility of moving easily, does not like home repairs, and isn't excited about permanent home decor choices. She likes seeing the money that would be needed for the house growing in an investment account. Through introspection, she discovers that home ownership is a goal she thinks or feels she should have but is not internally motivated to achieve. She says, "I guess I feel like I won't be a grown-up or be financially established until I own a home." Allowing her to explore this perfect world of imagining owning a home gives her the chance to identify goals that she will actually be motivated to reach. Such a process can reveal priorities to both the counselor and the client. Understand beliefs about money. Beliefs related to money matters refer to a client's learned financial behaviors and the unconscious beliefs that guide these behaviors. Beliefs are defined as convictions that certain things are true or real. These beliefs are part of a person's worldview and may come from their parents, influential people in their lives, politics, popular culture, and so on. These may have been lessons learned by one of these sources or by the client themselves. An elderly person who lived through the Depression may have learned some habits about saving not only money, but also goods. These beliefs may have validity in some situations, but as the client's life changes, they may still be applied in the same way even though their situation has changed. Beliefs about money can also be limiting because while they may be valid only in some situations, people treat them as if they were always valid and tend not to consciously think about them much at all. For example, if a client's parent always said, "You are only a paycheck away from disaster," and they internalize this belief, perhaps the client has decided that this risk is not something they can do anything about, even though in reality, the client could build an emergency savings fund. Similarly, a client may believe insurance is a scam and not trust insurance. A client who believes, "I'll never be able to retire," may not be proactive in saving for retirement. A client who thinks the stock market is too risky may only use very safe investments that fail to earn more than the inflation rate. If the client was denied many things as a child, they may argue with their partner about spending money on their own children, even for necessary things. They may say something about not wanting to finance the orthodontist's new boat and avoid having an honest discussion. Or the same deprivation as a child could lead to behavior of wanting to lavish gifts on their children, perhaps to excess. What can financial counselors do with this concept? First, they can think about their own beliefs related to money. Not only will this help counselors understand themselves better, but it will also give them a chance to rewrite some of these beliefs. They can ask themselves whether these beliefs are always true and when there are exceptions or situations where they do not apply. They can consider situations where they use them to make financial decisions that they later regretted. Then they can use the same techniques with their clients by supporting a client as they brainstorm their beliefs, discussing exceptions when a belief may not be true, exploring how well the concept fits into the client's current context or helps or hinders their financial issues or goals. The client must be ready for this process as it will challenge their worldview. The counselor should feel the person is ready from a change perspective. Note that a person's biases can help reinforce these beliefs. For example, confirmation bias, discussed shortly, can lead to accepting evidence reinforcing the belief and ignoring evidence to the contrary. Understand client biases and heuristics. Clients can have bias, which is defined as a cognitive distortion or behavioral tendency that can result in people making decisions that are not rational or logical. These types of decisions or habits can get in the way of making financial decisions that support a client's stated financial goals. Some biases are used to develop heuristics, which are defined as a rule of thumb or mental shortcut that is easy to apply for decision-making purposes but may not be applicable in some situations and can lead to poor decisions or biases in such cases. Here are some examples of biases. Hyperbolic discounting, a behavioral bias that involves persons favoring immediate rewards over rewards that require delayed gratification, even if a longer-term reward is greater or if avoiding the immediate reward option is needed to meet long-term goals. People value immediate benefits the closer they are to the present, but if benefits are still far off, they value delayed benefits more. Grable and Palmer, in Introduction to Personal Finance, noted that when people were asked if they would rather have $5 today or $7 tomorrow, two-thirds picked today, but if people would rather have $5 in 365 days or $7 in 366 days, most picked 366 days. While there is no wrong answer, the exercise reveals this bias towards immediate gratification when the time frame is short. Hyperbolic discounting can involve procrastination, a type of bias toward the present moment's desires over longer-term desires or goals. The reality is that long-term outcomes are based on a series of daily decisions. Familiarity bias, a cognitive tendency where individuals prefer things that feel known or comfortable, often at the expense of objectively better alternatives. A familiarity bias or status quo bias favors the current situation over a needed change or an opportunity. It can be based on fear of making a poor decision or fear of failure to change successfully. It plays into ambivalence by underestimating the benefits of a change and slash or downplaying the detractors of the current situation. Loss aversion bias. A loss aversion bias places more weight on a loss than on an equal gain. Grable and Palmer note that people value the joy of a gain only when it is twice as much as the potential loss. This bias is related to the emotional pain of losing, especially losing money. It affects investing decisions. People who identify with this bias may invest conservatively or not at all because of a fear of losing money, even though it means giving up the opportunity to make money with their investment. Endowment effect. The endowment effect bias involves placing more weight on one's current possessions over things one does not currently own. It is similar to the status quo and loss aversion biases and is related to developing an emotional bond with one's possessions. It can be applied to client goals. Once they own their goals, it will be more committed to them. Optimism bias. Optimism bias is the belief that bad things will rarely happen to you and that you are above average in most things. It can result in excessive risk-taking. Recency bias. The tendency to give undue weight to recent events or information when evaluating situations or making decisions. Confirmation bias, the tendency to favor information that aligns with one's existing beliefs while disregarding evidence that challenges them. This is the tendency of people to ignore facts or arguments that do not agree with their worldview while treating anything that confirms their worldview with more weight. It can reinforce the status quo, or if risk-taking pays off, it can reinforce more risk-taking. Some of these biases are used as heuristics or decision-making shortcuts that are basically rules of thumb. Some rules of thumb could be positive in general, such as a rule to save a certain percentage of income for retirement, but that given level may not be best for a given client's goals. A heuristic to save at least enough to get full employer matching is generally considered a good heuristic. Other heuristics can lead to poor financial decisions. Counselors should learn about client heuristics and biases and help them become aware of them and when they may or may not apply to their values and goals. Here are some types of heuristics related to buying behavior developed by Kahneman and Tversky and cited in Grable and Palmer. Anchoring heuristic. An influential person or organization creates a perception of how much something is worth to the client, so that amounts less than this seeing like a bargain. It is common in advertising to anchor a high price and then offer a discount. Availability heuristic. Repetition in advertising uses the availability heuristic, which is about placing more weight on things one recently saw or experienced. Perceived shortages are another example. Representativeness heuristic. The representation of something as a possible member of a group based on stereotypes can override the underlying probabilities about it. For example, a client may dress well or drive a nice car but not actually be wealthy. Another type of heuristic that people sometimes use is called herd behavior, which is defined as a tendency in financial decision-making where individuals follow the actions of a larger group, often driven by emotion, rather than independent analysis. A related term is herding mentality, behavioral finance, which is defined as a behavioral finance concept where individuals mimic the financial behaviors of a larger group, often disregarding their own analysis. Understand why people are prone to persuasion. The elements of persuasion are defined as a framework outlining key factors that influence an individual's ability to persuade others, often including elements like credibility, emotion, and logic. The skills of persuasion can and are used for selfish purposes. Advertisers use them, and as a result, some people overspend, gamble, etc. Scam artists use them to work their scams. Financial counselors should be wary of using tools to promote change that can make a client feel manipulated. The most effective counseling facilitates a process where the client convinces themselves. Trying to directly persuade clients outright may create pushback or shift responsibility to the counselor for making and acting on a plan. Having said this, invalid tools of financial counseling include an element of persuasion. Self-disclosure is an example, as discussed below. Two other examples are the primacy effect and the recency effect, which are defined as primacy effect. The cognitive bias where individuals are more likely to remember information presented at the beginning of a sequence. Recency effect, the cognitive bias where individuals are more likely to remember the most recently presented information in a sequence. These types of cognitive biases affect how well new information is retained. They are used not only in persuasion but also in tailoring the structure of educational sessions with clients to promote retention of learning. This latter use is positive since clients can choose to use the information or set it aside. Here are some elements of persuasion, primacy and recency. The primacy and recency effects are based on research suggesting it is easier to remember things at the start and end of a list. Advertisers and counselors use these principles by beginning and ending with the thing they most want a person to take away from the message. A takeaway is to break up longer teaching moments with activities and so on to keep the client's attention. Authority and credibility. People with legitimate power, authority, and those with perceived expertise, credibility will be perceived as being more trustworthy. In advertising or manipulative behavior, being honest about some minor shortcomings can create the perception of trustworthiness, even if not merited. Social cues. Clients in uncertain situations may seek social cues from nearby people or those who seem similar to them to guide their behavior. A classic con artist's role is to be the happy customer. In a Ponzi scheme, the current clients are unwitting happy customers since they do not know they are being paid with the money from new clients rather than investment earnings. Counselors can help temper this, follow the herd tendency in clients. Reciprocal behavior. Unwritten social rules create an expectation that if one person gives up something, such as a confidence, the other person is expected to respond in kind. Giving a compliment will tend to promote getting a compliment. Conceding something in a negotiation or appearing to do so can create an obligation to make a concession back. A self-disclosure can prompt a like self-disclosure. People sometimes use this to manipulate people into revealing things that could be used against them. Counselors can positively use self-disclosure, for example, by sharing a story that shows the counselor also had financial issues and addressed them, thus showing they are human too and there is hope. Or by giving an example of a financial detail that, if shared, would help identify authentic goals. These uses show acceptance and build trust. Saying why, a classic ploy in the art of persuasion is to give a reason why someone should do something that is not otherwise in their best interests. A loan collector could say, because I can tell you are an honest person, you should acknowledge that you created this debt, even though reaffirming an old debt would have serious consequences. The use of because greatly increases the chances of someone acceding to the demand. Comparisons. Making comparisons between a bad and a worse option can make the bad option seem much more acceptable than it actually is. The comparison could be omitting a better option. Comparisons can be used in counseling to help compare a current behavior against a more acceptable one. Need for closure. Cliffhangers in popular media play on people's need for closure. Ending a client's session with something for the client to think about is an example. For example, saying, you might be surprised by all of the potential solutions you can think up by next week, plays on the client's curiosity of what they might think up. From unhealthy to healthy financial behavior. What amounts to healthy financial behavior needs to be considered from the perspective of the client's goals. If the client expresses distress related to certain financial behaviors and wants help changing those behaviors, then the counselor can assist in setting clear goals. If a different client exhibits similar behavior but does not consider it harmful and it is not creating an immediate crisis for that client, then the counselor should accept this. The client may be in denial, but confronting the client with that denial is not usually effective. Here are some issues that some clients may want to work on because they have come to accept that for them, it is unhealthy financial behavior, underspending. Miserly behavior can lead to a lifestyle of self-denial beyond even the most basic comforts. Overspending. A client may be going deeper and deeper into credit card or other debt to pay for emotional purchases, gambling, or enabling someone else in their life to continue spending. Risk aversion or risk-taking. Some clients will be so risk-averse that they avoid even moderate risks. Others may ignore too many risks. Financial infidelity. Some clients keep financial secrets, such as from their partners or co-signers on a loan, which may have resulted in relationship conflicts. What are the key financial behaviors clients want to learn from a financial counselor and their own internal work once they realize the status quo is unsustainable? Key goals for financial behaviors include developing self-control, a desire to gain financial knowledge, literacy, and competency, and to learn the skills needed to apply that knowledge to their own choices. Let's look at the example of overspending. Sometimes overspending is a way of coping with anxiety or an attempt to keep up with perceptions of what possessions a successful person has. In cases with compulsive spending behavior, a referral to financial therapy is usually needed. Financial therapy is defined as a professional field that requires being a licensed therapist, and that provides its clients with integrated emotional and psychological support related to financial issues. Let's assume financial therapy is not needed for the following scenario. A financial counselor working with a client who has a goal of addressing problems with pressure-related shopping can start by addressing things such as behavioral scripting about money, examining their biases, or exploring their susceptibility to marketing persuasion. When the client is ready to adopt some change techniques, the counselor could provide the client with some helpful habits, such as a self-enforced timeout after deciding they want to make a purchase but before actually committing to it. This exercise can help some clients separate wants and needs. Another example is an exercise where the client calculates the cost per use of a proposed purchase. This is a logic exercise that may work well for clients who want to apply logic to the situation. The same exercise may be completely ineffective for a client who is working on the emotional side of the issue. A cost per use calculation estimates how often the client sees themselves using the item each year and how many years the purchase may last, as shown below. For example, a client is considering buying a fishing boat for $12,000. The client decides they are an occasional user at 4 times per year, and they decide a 3-year time frame is reasonable for the calculation since that is how long it will take to pay off the boat. While this is not necessarily the lifetime use of the boat, it is a time frame meaningful to the client, which is what really matters. Perhaps the client will decide to rent a boat a few times per year instead.